And finally, to Music Hall. This query is about a long-forgotten Music Hall star. Ian Compton says, my mother has often told me of a relative of mine who was a Music Hall performer called Daisy Dormer. I wonder if you could find out anything about her for me, please. OK, Ian, your wish is our command. So for a perambulatory peregrination into the past, put your hands together, ladies and gentlemen, please, for Mr. Ivan Howlett.
If you're after a date when the British Music Hall began, 1852 is probably as good as you'll get. That's the year Charles Morton, often described as the father of the Music Hall, turned the hall next to his pub, the Canterbury Arms in Lambeth, into a theatre. By the 1870s, they were getting on for 300 halls. And the great names over the 50 years of its popularity included Lily Langtry, Dan Leno, Murray Lloyd, Florrie Ford and Little Titch. And though she's largely forgotten now, Daisy Dormer was a big name too. Amidst the comics, the costermongers and novelty turns and the male impersonators, there was the sweet-voiced Daisy Dormer.
Dancing underneath the Irish moon, while the painters play an Irish tune.
Daisy Dormer recorded during the First World War when she was at the height of her fame.
Daisy was actually born as Kezia Beatrice Stockwell on the 16th of January 1883 in Southsea, Portsmouth.
Daisy Dormer's great niece, Alison Young.
Her mother was also on the stage, but not with any great success. She performed in the halls in Portsmouth. Her father was a riveter at the dockyards, but he also dabbled in a bit of amateur boxing and in fact died after contracting septicemia from a cut. During a boxing match. He died quite young at around 34, I think. She trained as a dancer when she was young, probably pushed by her mother along with her other two sisters, and took it from there.
And it took her right to the top, to the music halls in London and the theatres all round the country. And what she offered on stage was very different from the stereotypical don't dilly-dally chirpings of comic Cockney sparrows.
She was pretty, sweet, a good dancer, a good singer. Was always described as the dainty little lady. Dainty Daisy Dormer was her tag, and apparently that was a name given to her by Oswald Stoll. I have many press cuttings. All of them speak of how pretty, how petite, how sweet she is. She seems to have cultivated a line in songs where she was always the put-upon young lass who's been dealt with harshly by a soldier or a squire or a sailor.
Music Hall archivist Julian Myersko.
People think of Music Hall as comedy song, inane comedy sometimes, but there was ballads, there was patriotic songs, things that were just sheerly decorative in vocal terms. And she'd want you to look at her, to feel warm, that was the point. Standing right at the front of the footlights to give that intimacy, she'd make herself even more attractive by singing these lilting, lovely tunes. That song was underneath the Irish moon, and Ireland was still part of the British Empire. It was a very common theme of the music hall was to say that Scots and the Welsh and the Irish were all part of us, were all British.
During the early years of the 20th century, Daisy was top of the bill. Alison Young.
I think her greatest period of success was probably from around 1905 to the end of the First World War, around about 1918. She also seemed to make her name through success in pantomime. She appeared to have been fully booked in pantomime from the early 1900s right to 1921 or thereabouts. And she was particularly successful in Glasgow, which is no mean feat because Glasgow audiences are meant to be some of the toughest.
Daisy's private life had its troubles.
In 1908, she married Albert G, who's better known by his stage name, Albert Egbert, the brothers Egbert, who were billed as the Happy Dustmen. They met in pantomime in Glasgow. I don't believe it was a happy marriage. Daisy was certainly not happy that the brothers Egbert were called to perform at the first Royal Variety performance in 1912. And forever taunted him about his spinning on his head act. She considered they were lowbrow compared to her. Until recently, my family had believed that Daisy had remained childless, although we've recently discovered that she gave birth to a child in a Glasgow maternity hospital in 1914, who she shortly afterwards gave up for adoption. Apparently, she secretly visited this child for many years, but certainly it was something that wasn't known in the family and possibly could have contributed to Daisy's rather awkward and disappointed behaviour in later life.
The mystery about Daisy Dormer is why, for such a star, her name has been all but forgotten. But she might have had herself to blame for that.
She was a complete and utter perfectionist, and she wasn't that pleasant to work with. This may explain why she is excluded from so many recollections of fellow music hall artists of the time. She used to berate everyone from the manager down to the call boy if everything wasn't just perfect, and would practice dancing for hours at a time. So I don't think she was easy to work with, but I also don't think she was particularly easy to get on with in her everyday life as well. Her last recorded performance that we know of was at the Aldershot Hippodrome in 1932, when she was still top of the bill. And I understand that she always refused to hang up her boots, as it were, and did try to perform right until the end.
Alison Young's father, Nicholas, who as a lad met Daisy, thinks it was the era that was coming to a close.
It's not so much her career. This is when I think that perhaps music hall had finished, variety had taken over, cinema obviously had taken over. Some American performers were beginning to arrive then. For Daisy Dormer, it probably was the end. I met Auntie Daisy several times in 1947 when our family returned to London. Grandma lived in Brixton, just a couple of miles from Auntie Daisy's flat in Clapham. So if we came up to London for the day, we'd often visit Auntie Daisy as well. Auntie Daisy's flat was a treat, mysterious and interesting and full of memorabilia and strange pictures and bits of costumes. And she would demonstrate cartwheels and handstands and little extracts of dances and little bits of songs that she'd do for us, still incredibly agile and fit.
But 1947 was the year that Daisy died, aged 64.
She did make quite a significant amount of money. She left a significant sum in her will, paid for numerous of her nieces and nephews to be privately educated, and purchased a house for my grandmother.
And her costumes?
Daisy's will provided for her costumes to be left to the commanding officer, Royal Naval Barracks, Portsmouth. She wanted to leave them her glamorous clothes, her character and comedy dresses, wigs, etc., for the use of the ratings of any ship. So she didn't forget her Portsmouth origins. And we have actually been trying to find out what happened to that theatrical hamper, but so far without success. I do hope that some of the ratings did make use of them in their amateur productions.
Till armies late shall dancing, dancing with the Irish moon.
What an exotic ancestor to have, Ivan Howlett reporting on dainty Daisy Dormer.